Good morning. The war with Iran claims more U.S. soldiers' lives as the fighting deepens. Relatives of the ICE agent allegedly behind the fatal shooting in Maine say that he had a history of violent behavior. And how Spain proved their doubters wrong and won the World Cup.
Spain, as the winners, didn't have as many superstars as the other teams, didn't have that one huge outstanding guy, but they were collectively better.
It's Monday, July 20th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shumita Basu. This is Apple News Today. At least three American service members have been killed in the Iran conflict since Friday, making it the deadliest few days for U.S. forces in the region in months. The latest service member was killed in northern Iraq during a controlled detonation of a downed Iranian drone. Two others were confirmed dead after a strike in Jordan. The U.S. blamed Iran and carried out retaliatory strikes on Iranian coastal surveillance and air defense facilities. Yesterday, President Trump was asked about the U.S. casualties.
We feel very badly, but you know, those great people, those great patriots were out there fighting that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Iran has been very, very badly damaged. They've lost everything almost militarily.
Last night marked the ninth consecutive night of U.S. strikes. The conflict now appears to be deepening in scale and scope. U.S. allies like Kuwait have borne the brunt of Iran's attacks, where a desalination plant was struck. Jordan has now been hit too, and Bahrain has intercepted several missiles. Now, nearby countries are becoming increasingly concerned about getting dragged back into the conflict, as Jim Muir, the BBC's former Middle East correspondent, told the broadcaster.
The Americans are bringing in apparently dozens more warplanes into the region, parking them in Israel for the moment. And it's all, as I say, looking very grim. The UAE, the United Arab Emirates, put out statements saying this escalation's got to stop. It's very, very dangerous because they know they would be really in the front line if it gets much worse.
This round of fighting initially broke out after Iran attacked commercial ships attempting to cross the Strait of Hormuz. Since then, retaliatory back-and-forth strikes have brought the war back to a familiar state prior to the interim peace deal. On Saturday, Iran said it had suspended its commitments to that deal, leaving the future of the vital waterway unknown. Democratic Senator and Vice Chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner, told CBS's Face the Nation that he believed none of the president's goals had been met.
Regime change? Well, the guys in charge now are worse than the prior crowd. Getting the enriched uranium?
Yep.
No progress on that. It'll take 15,000 troops on the ground. Nobody wants to do that. We said we were going to degrade their ability to use missiles and drones. Obviously, we've not been successful. And then finally, the Strait of Hormuz, you know, gas is now back up to $4. That's $1.20 more than it was, at least in Virginia, when the war started. And there is no plan on how we keep the Strait open.
Energy Secretary Chris Wright spoke to ABC News on Sunday and insisted that oil was flowing at about two-thirds the rate that it was compared to March, shortly after the war began. He even said that public data on how much crude was moving through the strait is inaccurate.
There's flow through two routes through the Strait of Hormuz. There's up near the Iranian islands that's flow complicit with Iran, but that's not nothing. And then there's flow through the southern route that's protected by American infrastructure. And we count the volume of oil that goes through. The ship numbers are down more dramatically, but of course we're flowing larger tankers now to keep the world markets as well supplied as we can.
Admiral James Stavridis, former NATO Supreme Allied Commander, told CNN on Sunday that Trump has three options before him. The first is to walk away. The second is a large-scale return to combat with the possibility of U.S. boots on the ground, or option three.
Which is what you're seeing, increasing to some degree the kinetic activity, the bombs, increasing economic sanction pain, hopefully getting our allies on side. And above all, keeping the door open for negotiation. Some have called this, and I think it's accurate, escalate to de-escalate, to force them back to the table.
President Trump told News Nation in an interview that he, quote, couldn't care less that Iran would no longer abide by the terms of their agreement. Just a quick heads up, this segment describes domestic violence and abuse and might be disturbing to some listeners. Scrutiny on ICE agents has continued to grow in recent days after two fatal shootings within a week. Lorenzo Salgado Araujo was killed in Houston July 7th, and then last Monday, Johann Sebastian Duran Guerrero was shot in Maine, both during vehicle stops. It's hard to know exactly what happened, as agents weren't wearing body cameras. On Sunday, President Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, confirmed that during future vehicle stops, at least one officer would wear a body camera. He also suggested the partial government shutdown had held up the rollout nationwide.
Now we have the funding after reconciliation. The cameras have been purchased. Right now, they're training the trainer and deploying the cameras nationwide.
In the more recent Maine shooting, the Department of Homeland Security said the officer discharged his weapon after the vehicle attempted to flee. They haven't released the agent's name, but he's been identified in various outlets as David Brulette. The Associated Press has spoken to several relatives who describe him as an individual with a violent history.
Everyone said that he had no business being handed a gun and a badge to patrol the streets as an ICE officer. They said that they all had experienced fear of him throughout their lives, and court records indicated that there's a pattern of him attacking and harassing women in his life over the years.
Jack Brooke is a reporter with the AP who broke this story. He spoke with Ashley Brulette, David's high school sweetheart and first wife. Ashley said that she and David divorced in 2009 after he'd become violent with her while she was pregnant. She said that even after they separated, the abuse continued.
She shared a voicemail that he had sent to her late last year in which he said someone should slit her throat. And so, you know, those are the kind of experiences that she has had with this man. And so when her ex-husband told her late last year that he had joined ICE, she didn't believe him. She thought he was having a psychiatric episode.
She also told the AP that he had asked her not to share details of this alleged history.
I told him that I was not going to lie for him, that I've waited years to speak my truth. I've been silenced long enough, and now I need to come out with everything because a man lost his life.
Other relatives that Brooke spoke to pointed to a long history of mental health issues in interviews and family court records. Brulette's second wife alleged that he had stalked, harassed, and physically abused her, and was granted a temporary protective order for her daughter back in 2021. According to CBS, court records show a history of reciprocal abuse and harassment allegations, but no criminal convictions. In the court filings, Brulette said that he had been slandered. Brooke said the people they spoke to felt that this should have come up in the screening process.
I think everyone that knows him is saying he was not mentally fit to be in this position, and his pattern of violent and abusive behavior should have been a red flag for anyone doing a background check, according to his relatives.
Brulette is a military veteran, but he only joined ICE last year. He was part of a wave of more than 12,000 new DHS recruits brought in since Trump began his second term. Critics say the speed of that expansion has come at a cost of training and proper vetting. ICE denies those reports, and a spokesperson told the AP that Brulette had nearly a decade of federal law enforcement experience with required training, including use of force training. They wouldn't confirm Brulette's role in the shooting and told AP, quote, "We will never confirm or deny attempts to dox our law enforcement officers." Brulette didn't respond to AP's requests for comments. The officers involved in both the Maine and Houston shootings have been placed on administrative leave. After 104 games, 308 goals, and 15 red cards, one nation was left standing and celebrating.
And when Roger's ready, here we go. Spain have won the World Cup!
It was a deserved win for the Spanish, who broke down Argentina in more of a grind-it-out game than a classic.
Expected Spain to dominate possession, to have more of the ball, to push Argentina back, and that's how it was.
That's Dermot Corrigan, who covers Spanish soccer for The Athletic. Argentina failed to muster a single shot in 90 minutes, seemingly wanting to take the game to penalties, and their persistent fouls eventually led to a red card.
Argentina got more and more desperate, and then in extra time it was one-way traffic the whole way.
And eventually they broke through.
Poro chance to cross, hooks it in. Williams battling, knocks it down. It's free. It's a goal. It's Ferran Torres.
It's Spain's second World Cup win, and it comes after securing the European Championships only 2 years ago. They had an incredible tournament, especially in the knockout stages, where they didn't concede a single goal. And yet the result is still something of a surprise. Going into the tournament, Spain wasn't always among the most talked about countries. They lack a proven superstar like Messi, and they got off to a bit of a slow start. but they showed their talent as the tournament went on.
Spain are just so good at controlling the game. They're so good at keeping the ball when they have it. Their passing is excellent. Their positioning on the pitch is excellent. They're really calm. They don't make mistakes in possession. And when they lose the ball, they're really good at winning it back as well.
And Corrigan notes that when they're ahead, they don't become too defensive, as England did when they crumbled to Argentina. The country's soccer culture runs deep, and they produce an extraordinary number of world-class stars.
Kids in the Spanish system are just taught really well how to play football. It's quite basic, but it's not about being the guy who scores the most goals or being the biggest guy, the strongest guy on the team. It's about understanding the game, which passes to make. It's a collective thing. That's what's great about soccer from my point of view anyway, and Spain are a really great example of that.
Their win brings the most watched sporting event in the world to a close. And this was a World Cup that brought a lot of different changes. More countries than ever, contentious hydration breaks, and a distinctly American halftime show that smashed through the allotted 15-minute allocated break. Corrigan said that some of these changes might be here to stay. As for FIFA President Gianni Infantino, he found himself getting booed last night as he walked in with President Trump. But Corrigan doubts that he's in any real trouble.
I don't think it's going to affect his position at FIFA too strongly. He's up for re-election next year. That seems like he has that pretty much sewn up at this stage. Some of the European nations weren't happy about what happened, but Infantino will probably just ride it out pretty easily, it looks like.
And when it comes to the takeaways for the game itself, Corrigan said that last night demonstrated that in the end, it's the team that matters the most.
Maybe it's because it was in America, or maybe it's just the way things are in modern football. But this was a tournament that a lot of the narrative was around the superstars. It was the Mbappes, the Messis, the Cristiano Ronaldos. The flip side of that is that it's still a team sport, and that Spain didn't have as many superstars as the other teams, didn't have that one huge outstanding guy, but they were collectively better. They played for each other and they were able to win it.
And along with Morocco and Portugal, they'll be co-hosting the next World Cup. Just 4 years to go. Here are a few other stories we're following today. The UK gets its seventh prime minister in the span of 10 years today, as Andy Burnham formally takes the helm. Dubbed King of the North for his time as the mayor of Manchester, Burnham won over the Labour Party as a more popular alternative to Keir Starmer and helped to force him out the door. He's promised to bring utilities under more public control, provide relief to gas bills, and build more social housing. In the U.S., Maine Democrats are beginning to consolidate around a candidate as their nominee against Republican Susan Collins. Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows and physician Nirav Shah, the former head of the state CDC, announced that they would be dropping out yesterday. It comes as Troy Jackson, the former state Senate president, has been gathering support. Next week, delegates will formally select a candidate to replace Graham Plattner, who exited the race following a sexual assault allegation that he denies. It was a record that stood for 27 years until Saturday.
It's going to be mighty fast, and surely he's going to break the world record. He does. He obliterates the world record. Josh Kerr takes down what he has been predicting since late March.
That's the sound of Kerr finishing a mile in the blistering time of 3 minutes and 42 seconds. The Scottish 28-year-old beat the previous record by nearly half a second. And he had set out to do this for months, training in high altitude in New Mexico and working with the company Brooks on custom spikes and a speed suit. And he had two training partners that kept him on pace to beat the record. Kerr did say it was a little silly to say that he planned to break it so early, but he also added that his team got him through the challenge. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. New York Magazine reports on how Vanderbilt University, a private college in Tennessee, executed a decades-long reputational makeover, and why some are calling it the new Harvard. If you're listening to the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.